Good afternoon. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. On this Thursday, it's Reporters Roundtable Thursday, and that means we call on some of the members of the Northwest Indiana media to join us to talk about the stories that they have posted online and in print as well, or on the air in some cases. Today we have, from the Times of Northwest Indiana, Dan Carton, Rob Earnshaw, and from the Post Tribune, Greg Tejeda. And joining us for the first time from the Times and other media in LaPorte County, Stan Maddox will be with us. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. On this Reporters Roundtable Thursday, let's turn first to Dan Carton. He covers State House news and other news of state government interest for the Times of Northwest Indiana. Dan, thanks for being with us again today.
Good to be here.
Well, let's start out first with an interesting story that you've had in paper, as well in print as well as online, on some changes in Indiana law, and in particular in Indiana criminal law involving the age of consent.
Yeah, let's try not to lose your FCC license.
Well, do your best, please. Thank you.
Sure. So it was actually an Indiana Supreme Court decision. It was an interesting case where effectively the ruling was that the Supreme Court reiterated that it continues to be against the law to send sexually explicit photographs to somebody who was under age 18. Called disseminating material harmful to minors. A part of that law had been struck down a while ago by the Court of Appeals because in Indiana, the age of sexual consent or sexual activity is 16 years old. So you have this sort of weird outcome where under Indiana law, based on this decision, a person would be allowed to have sex with a 16-year-old, but could not send a sexually explicit photograph to a 16-year-old. Mm-hmm. That would be a felony.
Uh-huh. I can see it's very difficult to understand and to explain as well, too, I suppose. But that's the way it is written out in law. And so we have to rely on the attorneys and the prosecutors in particular in a matter like this to be able to explain it here. Tell us what you've discovered in doing the story about this case that came up here. This was, by the way, a case that originated in Hamilton County, and just north of Indianapolis.
Right. It was a teacher who was working there sent a sexually explicit photograph to a 16-year-old girl in Oregon, and the girl's parents called the police, who called the FBI, who got in touch with the Indiana people. He was arrested for disseminating material harmful to minors, and the argument that he made was, if I had had sex with this girl, that would be totally fine, mm-hmm. but sending a photograph is illegal, and He was making the case that that's completely illogical. That's a similar outcome that the Court of Appeals had reached in 2009 in a similar case. But the Supreme Court says, you know, they have to go by what's in the statute. They defer to the wisdom of the legislature, such as it is on this situation. And the statute says, if you want to have sex with a 16-year-old, in most circumstances, go ahead and do it. If you send them a naked picture, you're going to get arrested.
Interesting. What are some of the members of the Indiana Supreme Court have to say about what they've discovered in this?
Well, I mean, they don't really talk to the media about the cases. Really, all we get is the decision itself. But Mark Massa, the justice who wrote the decision, pointed out that, you know, if the legislature wants to change this, it is free to change this. I mean, but the way the law reads now, even though it does seem inconsistent that, you know, it would be a crime to send a naked photo, but to someone under 18, but to have sex with a 16-year-old is fine. That's just what it is.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if there are any lawmakers, we'll say from Central Indiana, where this case seemed to have originated, that might have to think twice about whether they in turn want to take up introducing a bill in the next General Assembly session about this.
Yeah, and there have been efforts. Carly Macers, the state representative from Indianapolis, has been pushing for this. Senator Frank Mervan from Hammond, Representative Linda Lawson from Hammond, both advocated for this in the past to raise the age of sexual consent to 18. But then you get into all sorts of other issues. You know, if you have a 18-year-old high school senior who's dating a 17-year-old high school junior, and the age of consent is 18, then that's technically statutory rape.
That's right.
You know, having sex after prom or something. So
yeah, that would open up a lot more discovery into what other changes have to be made in Indiana criminal law that probably weren't even thought about, I'm sure.
Right. It sounds like a simple fix, but once you go there, there's a whole lot of stuff that's connected to that age of consent. I mean, you could go the other way too and say, well, maybe the definition of a minor should be 16. I mean, if you can drive a car and you can have sex, maybe you should be allowed to view sexually explicit photographs, since you probably got the internet in your bedroom and you're already doing it anyway.
Well, don't you think this is going to make for a very interesting 2018 General Assembly session? You know,
it's always an interesting
session.
That's
true. Yeah, we're kind of stretching it. I know, but the idea being that anything can come up, and that's what I know that that's what the folks at the Times Media Company pay you for, is to keep an eye on these
exactly.
things as these matters crop up in the General Assembly. One of the other things, getting away from Indiana criminal law here to another story, which is a lot closer to home.
Yeah.
We of course kept close eye here in recent weeks and months from the standpoint of how the Gary Community School Corporation is doing financially, and now the issues that the state-appointed emergency manager is having to take and her team in trying to deal with the money problems. State Senator Eddie Melton is weighing in onto it now, and I bet that we'll probably see another change in the law someplace too, don't you think?
Well, maybe. It'll be interesting to see how many people he can get on board. He believes that Gary and Muncie is also under a kind of an emergency manager arrangement now. He believes those two schools aren't the only two schools that are in pretty dire financial straits. He thinks, you know, tax caps and the growing number of charter schools and voucher schools have really sapped a lot of money from a lot of public schools all over Indiana, and he wants to create a system where the legislature could, well, and citizens, too, could effectively keep tabs on the financial condition of their local schools, not having to, page through hundreds of pages of, audit reports or financial documents, but just sort of a website where you could see four or five key indicators and get a sense for how your school is doing. Is their budget balanced? How is their debt compared to other school districts? And use that as a tool to hopefully prevent another situation like we had in Gary, where the district has more than $100 million in outstanding debt. It hasn't balanced its budget in years, and it just kind of the finances kind of got away from the school board up there.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is he thinking that there might be a way to be able to accomplish this task here without having to create an awful lot of nightmares making software and the like here? He thinks that there's the mechanism already there, or at least the agency certainly there that could help on this, couldn't it?
Yeah, the Legislative Services Agency is a nonpartisan entity within the General Assembly that puts legislator ideas into sort of the necessary legalese. They assess the financial impact of proposed legislation. And they also do a lot of research into state agencies, local governments, things like that, that legislators want them to look into. They've put together sort of a preliminary school finance dashboard, that's what they're calling it, that would basically, convey the information that Senator Melton wants people to be able to access. The LSA people acknowledge that it would be a lot of work to do it for every school corporation, but, if they're told by the legislature to do it, that's what they'll do.
That's right. They'll salute off and go to work, I suppose, and
exactly.
get to start doing an awful lot of coding to create something that'll work like this. I know there is probably some concern as well, too, that if they did happen to come up with this dashboard, did have this opportunity made available so that that the officials could take a look at what school corporations are doing financially, how they're doing. I'm sure there are probably some concerns about whether they get the cooperation out of a school district if the state says, hey, we've got to pull you up and bring you up before us for review on this. You've got some financial problems. I'm sure that there'll be a lot of people that'll probably deny they even had any problems.
Yeah, and really, what is the state going to do? Is the state going to put, $500 million in a fund to send out to schools that are facing financial problems?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of a lot of components to this that just really haven't been fleshed out yet. It'll be, I mean, Senator Melton, you know, this will be a second session.
Yeah.
He did get the Gary bill last session and did some work on the South Shore stuff as well. So, you know, he's learning the process. He's knowing the process. So, you know, if he can put something together by January, it'll, a chance to be considered alongside everything else.
Well, all our best to Senator Melton as everybody's watching him, because that would be a great idea if it could be accomplished. We'll find out more. We're talking with Dan Carton with the Times of Northwest Indiana about stories that he's had online and in print here lately. And one of the story to cover is looking here, Dan, at what Governor Eric Holcomb has to say, trying to get the efforts made on the Trump administration to support full federal funding for double tracking and the Westlake extension of the South Shoreline.
Yeah, it's actually been kind of a full court press from the Indiana delegation. When Governor Pence was here a couple weeks ago to push for tax reform in Indianapolis, Governor Holcomb took him aside, handed him a letter thanking the U.S. Transportation Secretary Lane Chao for coming in August and learning about the South Shore, and urging her to push for full federal funding for the South Shore double tracking and Westlake extension. And then again, when President Trump was here last month, Senator Todd Young and Senator Joe Donnelly both talked with him about, you know, the opportunities, the economic development opportunities that would be tied to a expanded and you know, better service and more frequent service along the South Shore, what that would mean for Northwest Indiana.
Well, you certainly know that the congressional delegation and back home here in Indiana, the state delegation, are doing what they should be doing, which is, you say, going full court press on the government to get them to do this support of this and such a program that not only requires so much money from the federal government, but of course there's a state match I know that has to be met as well too, and we have local and other expansion that's going to be planned, I'm sure, as well. If it hasn't already been talked about or proposed, they're going to have to do some more work as well here in Northwest Indiana on this.
Yeah, one of the reasons the Hoosier legislators think Indiana, Northwest Indiana, has a good shot at this federal money is because the state and local money largely has been raised. So if you remember last session, the Indiana General Assembly put in place the money for the double tracking. 2 years ago, they put in place the money for Westlake, the state share, and then the Congressman Viskovsky has been rounding up communities to contribute the local share. I know that's still somewhat controversial, but the money effectively is there to match the federal funds if they get put in. The trick is, you know, President Trump's first budget, when he first came into office, zeroed out the money that would go to this. Congress ignored his proposal and put the money in anyway, and a big chunk of that money actually ended up going to the city of Chicago for some L work. But going forward, you know, we're looking at another budget. So next year in 2018, they'll start working on the 2019 federal budget in Congress. And the idea is that either Trump puts the money for these programs in there, or that the Congress will ignore the president as they have on a lot of things and make sure the money for the South Shore gets appropriated.
And you get the impression that even if it has to wait until the 2019 budget, that it's not going to throw the timetable off too far?
No, this was the plan all along. The NCTI, the people who operate the train line, have been always shooting for this 2019 budget, which actually would take effect in October 2018, so just a year from now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Let's give them the best of luck in that one as well, too. We've been talking with Dan Carton, the State House reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana, on the stories that he has had in the newspaper and in the website as well, too. And thank you, as always, for being with us, Dan, and hope to have you back on again real soon.
Anytime.
Okay, take care. You're listening to Regionally Speaking here on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Well, let's turn now to Rob Earnshaw of the Times of Northwest Indiana to find out about the stories that he has offered up that you can read online as well as in the print edition of the Times. Rob, as always, thank you for being with us today.
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Well, pretty good, pretty good. Here, let's talk first about congratulations all around to a fellow who has worked very hard as a career educator, and he's picked up quite an honor from the state that he gets to carry on. Maybe you can make it even a national honor, can't he?
Oh, Mr. Flew. Yeah, Jerry Flewelling. Yeah, that's what his kids call him.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, I did not know that. That's very good.
Yeah, he seems like a great guy. Physics teacher, and he was surprised at this event. His kids were there. They greeted him, and seemed to get a little emotional, but according to everybody who was there and his students, it's a well-deserved honor.
Is he like one of these all-gosh guys? You know, he'll accept the honors, but he seemed almost embarrassed to have it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it credits his children, you know, everyone, his family, his students, and he's the kind of teacher I would have loved to have had. I mean, I've had some like him, but definitely a teacher that any student would be lucky to have, from what I gained from meeting him and being there.
The Indiana Department of Education, and it even came down with the big announcement when they went through the list of finalists. He was one of the finalists for the 2018 Teacher of the Year Award, and he's picked up even praises from Superintendent of Public Instruction to talk about, I guess, going all the way up to the top to being recognized for all the work that he's done as a teacher here in Northwest Indiana as well. What reactions have you gotten if you were there for the big awarding of the award there at the school? The other day?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones is he's the first one in the entire region to get this award, and since 1995, I believe, there's a teacher in Hammond. So that was probably what was most talked about. I think before that, a previous one was probably like the 50s or late 50s.
Oh, my.
So it's that was big. That was big, but you know, they had the Teacher of the Year who won last year. Not going to try to pronounce her first name, but it's from Logansport, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
She was there to, I guess she sat in his room, too, and observed that she's one of the people who vote for these things. So she had some good things to say.
That's great to hear, and congratulations to Mr. Flew for picking up that honor for the 2018 Teacher of the Year Award from the State Department of Education. One of the other stories I know, Rob, that you worked on this week also involves some investigation by the authorities on matters involving the investigation by the Lake County Prosecutor's Office. They're looking into this, and I've asked for some assistance in looking into an allegation that was made in Winfield. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Winfield's been in the news lately. Well, allegedly, the attorney for this gentleman who is taking this matter further, Roy Dominguez is the attorney, you know, former sheriff, and allegedly the Winfield town councilman, Jim Simmons, came across this landscaper and told him, according to the attorney Dominguez, that he needed to move debris out of the road, and the landscaper said, you know, we'll move it when we're done. And there was an argument, and the allegations say that Simmons left and ran over this guy's foot, sending him to the hospital. So they want they don't want Winfield to investigate. They don't want the Winfield Marshal to investigate. So they're asking the county police are going to look into it. The sheriff has already said that they will investigate this matter.
Do they feel that they were turned far enough away from the incident and all the people involved in it to be able to investigate it without prejudice?
I think so. Originally, in a letter from Dominguez, he wanted the state police to...
That's what I was thinking. That's not always the case, but that's typically the case, that they want to get as far away from the local government as they can.
Right.
That's where they ask the folks in Indianapolis to send somebody up here. They'll even send somebody from general headquarters rather than rely on, in this case, the Lowell Post to look into it.
But I guess, you know, Prosecutor Bernard Carter, felt that, the county could look at it and the sheriff, and that's what we're waiting on now. So an investigation has began, I guess you could say. And we'll see what happens out of this. It's pretty interesting. You don't hear a lot of this kind of thing out of Winfield, so.
I know, but the most you hear is the last concern was a vehicle that was found in a lake, I think.
That was a cool story.
That was from a vehicle that had been missing for years and years, and all of a sudden they find this thing in the lake in the back of the property and drag it out, and now they're trying to figure out, number one, how did this pickup truck end up in the lake?
Yeah.
And number two, who might have put it in the lake? You know, it's among all the other things they'd have to look into.
Yeah, I heard a couple of things. One, I know the marshal, I think in the story, mentioned that he thinks that a thief drove it out there, that somebody took it out there when the lake was frozen, beginning to thaw, happened during the winter, and it fell in. So That's a pretty neat mystery. I don't know if we'll ever hear any more of that, but we'll see.
I just can't help but think that even if it was driven out onto an icy lake in the middle of winter and it was still frozen solid, that somebody didn't notice it out there on the lake. You know,
I know.
But that's the way these things go. Yeah.
The marshal told me that people are actually still inquiring about this vehicle. Like, is it, you know, possibly buying it, or can it be reused? So, yeah, I don't know.
That's amazing. One of the other stories, Rob Earnshaw, that we know that you worked on as well, too, dealt with something that's a little closer to most people's concerns, sewer costs, and for communities in particular. And there are quite a few, I guess, that have been concerned about how well their sewer systems work in their community and what they'll be paying more on their bills for covering whatever work that has to be done. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, well, actually, there's probably about five or six communities in several months. Their councils, town council, or city council has upped the sewer rates. Crown Point did not too long ago because they need a lot of infrastructure improvements.
Yeah.
And like at that meeting, they had a public hearing, and really only a few people showed up. Now Winfield, which was about a week ago, that drew probably 30 or 40 residents, concerned residents. And they're going to have to pay an additional $2 increase per 1,000 gallons of water used. Now, if you live in Doubletree East or Doubletree Lake Estates, you'll have to pay an additional $10 a month.
Oh, really?
Because that's where the whole flooding infrastructure, the whole sewer infrastructure, went to pot, or I guess you could say. So, it's a big deal out there.
What seemed to get the project going here? I understand it was, I guess, something there in Doubletree East that involved, I guess, only one particular house or a property that got all this.
Yeah. It's kind of, one house, they were doing work, and it's like the opening of the old Beverly Hillbillies where the oil starts coming out of the ground.
Yeah.
But in this case, it was sewage coming out of the ground. And
I think I prefer oil, maybe.
Yeah, I think Doubletree Wood does too, and probably the whole town and everybody else. But, and that started it. They did some studies. There's about 11, I don't know, a dozen manholes that were buried underground, a sewer line going under the lake there, and it's about a $6 million project.
Tell us if you and what you looked into for looking into the story here. What did the folks at the Winfield Town Hall tell you about Doubletree East and how it seems to have been kind of overlooked apparently, and when it's come to expansion or improvements over the years there?
It was built. It was a private development before the town was incorporated into a town, Winfield, before they had their council, and that's a mystery. They can't find any paperwork for it. And about, in 2005, the council at that time purchased all the sewer infrastructure, and supposedly without doing any inspections. So they inherited that mess, and that's what led to all this, this whole issue. So. Mm-hmm.
Now, do we know, is there any other regulatory agency that has to look over this request for the increase in the sewer rates there in that area there, in the Winfield area?
Yeah, I think the state, can't think of the name of it right now, but
The Utility Regulatory Commission.
Get into that much. This was just mainly I covered the town meeting, and with the just a bunch of people, they're asking why it's happening. Can they sue the developer who did this? Which I guess they can't. There's that can't be done. And it's a mess, but it's supposedly going to be taken care of. But there are a lot of unhappy people there at that meeting.
Well, it's going to come up again. I'm sure that in some time or another in the near future that this will pop up again at another Winfield Town Council meeting.
Yeah, and like happens. I said, there's several communities that are raising, everyone seems to be raising their sewer fees right now, so...
We're talking with Rob Earnshaw with the Times of Northwest Indiana about the stories that he has worked on and put online and in print in the paper recently. And as always, Rob, thank you very much for being with us. Hope to chat again real soon.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Reporters Roundtable Thursday on Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. On this Reporter Roundtable Thursday, it's time to take a look at some news from LaPorte County. And we welcome to the roundtable a new member, Stan Maddox. You've seen his stories published in the Times of Northwest Indiana, also in the South Bend Tribune. And he is also news director for the LaPorte radio stations, WLOI and Eagle 96.7. Stan, thank you for being with us today on the show.
You're welcome.
Well, let's start out first here talking about an interesting defamation lawsuit that has been filed in LaPorte County involving a person who has a private job, but also a very public job. Tell us about that.
Well, several months ago, Cool Spring Township resident Dennis Matheny attended a LaPorte County Council meeting, and he's been known as a political watchdog for many years now here in LaPorte County, very vocal person. And at this county council meeting, he was raising questions about the opioid addiction, and he started raising questions about one of the commissioners who happens to be a practicing medical physician and asking questions about over-prescribing opioids, painkillers, and and question whether this county commissioner, who's a doctor, had something to do with the problem being so severe locally. Mm-hmm. Now, he didn't directly accuse the commissioner of having a link to the problem, but the way he phrased his questions, he kind of insinuated that maybe the doctor had a role to play in the opioid abuse locally. So Dr. Vidya Kaura, county commissioner now for several years, filed a lawsuit claiming defamation of character. And as the process wound its way through the courts, they resulted in a settlement agreement where Mr. Dennis Matheny paid Dr. Kaura $20,000 and issued a public apology at the last LaPorte County Council meeting.
I understand that apology was basically just a statement that was ordered to be said pretty much as part of the settlement?
Yes, it was a statement that he read word for word. I'm not sure who prepared the statement, but probably from Dr. Kaura's attorney, I'd imagine.
I would imagine, yeah.
The statement issued an apology saying that he had no information whatsoever that Dr. Kaura was a contributor to this problem and that he would act in a more civil manner at the future LaPorte County Council and LaPorte County Commissioners meetings.
Now, since you've covered these meetings for a number of years, do you see that Mr. Matheny is going to back off on his watchdog status, do you think, and even in light of this defamation lawsuit being settled out of court?
That might be difficult for him. Right now, he's acting rather calmly.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll wait and see, because he's a very vocal person, a very emotional person. It doesn't take much for him to get excited at these meetings. But so far, he's kind of a much different person right now. We'll have to wait and see.
Okay. One of the other stories that you covered that was published in the Times from LaPorte County deals with a LaPorte County jail. Tell us about that.
Well, they've been having a problem for several months now with illegal drugs, heroin, cocaine, getting into the jail. They had an offender several weeks ago actually overdosed on fentanyl,
mm-hmm.
the powerful pain-killing drug, and they wound up finding her unconscious in her cell and took her to the hospital where she died. And then just a couple of weeks ago, they had charges filed against a jail cook who was working there part-time, and he allegedly smuggled in some contraband, smuggled in a cell phone, perhaps even some of the drugs they found in a ceiling above the ceiling tiles in a jail bathroom. They haven't charged him with that yet. They just charged him with bringing the cell phone in. Well, anyway, the former jail cook was charged, and now as a result of this activity that's been going on, they've decided to have a body scanner. They just decided about a week ago to purchase a body scanner for $100,000, and it should be getting installed here within the next couple of weeks. So all the offenders, when they're being booked, will be passing through this body scanner, and the scanner will detect if they have any illegal substances, perhaps in a body cavity, perhaps if they swallowed it, you know, things of that nature, because that's how the drugs were getting into the jail.
Yeah. I wonder, too, if they'll have to do if they haven't already done so, do another sweep of the entire jail just to make sure they have caught everything that might have been hidden away someplace since they did find find the drugs there in that bathroom.
Yeah, I would imagine they've already done a sweep or two, but they might do them on a more regular basis.
Yes.
Who knows?
But the former
jail cook who's charged with smuggling contraband, mm-hmm. you would think that they would automatically have the jail employees go through the scanner, but they haven't made that decision yet because they say, well, having the jail employees go through the scanner could affect morale, could be embarrassing, you know, to learn of a coworker who has something perhaps they don't want others to know about that could be on a personal basis. So they haven't made a decision on that yet.
Okay.
But they're definitely going to scan the offenders.
We're talking with Stan Maddox, who writes about LaPorte County news events for the Times of Northwest Indiana, as well as for the South Bend Tribune and the LaPorte area radio media. And Stan, one of the other stories I know you covered, a couple of stories actually, but they're related, is the exit of LaPorte's police chief and the naming of a new police chief. Let's start out here with the fellow who's left.
Well, Adam Klimczak's been chief for about 5.5 years now, appointed by Mayor Milo, who's no longer the mayor. She took the job down in Indianapolis with the state government. So there's been a little controversy. The chief here in LaPorte, you know, and one of the city council people, Roger Galloway, was kind of vocal, feeling that the chief wasn't purchasing enough weapons for the police. Felt maybe the chief wasn't being aggressive enough to crack down the local drug problem, and that's been happening for a couple of years. But eventually, when Mayor Milo left and the new mayor, Mark Krentz, came in, they had a sit-down, and the police chief, Adam Klimczak, decided to turn in his letter of resignation. He's still on the department as captain after they appointed the new chief, Tom Owens. Tom Owens has been with the department for 26 years. He's also, in his spare time, a martial arts instructor, which is rather interesting, and a public safety expert. So Tom Owens has just started. Adam Klimczak's still on as captain. And whether politics had anything to do with it, nobody will say. But Chief Klimczak says he's just kind of interested in pursuing perhaps another career avenue, perhaps in the private sector, but he's going to stay on at the police department at least for the next couple of weeks or maybe a few months.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, you never know what happens. And we, of course, as we know, in many, many communities across the not only Northwest Indiana, but elsewhere in the state, a lot of people that are appointed to jobs in police departments and fire departments by mayors and other officials are tied to politics in one way or the other. Either they're members of the same party or whatever the case may be. So who knows? We'll find out, I suppose, if anything develops out of that. Well, finally,
yeah, you're right. That's definitely not unusual. That's for sure.
Yes. Well, finally, Stan, let's talk a little bit about a story that's in fact that's made it on your radio station's website here just recently. Here, a discussion that came up at the LaPorte County Commissioners meeting not long ago about the future of the courthouse in Michigan City. Probably people never even realized there was one there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The county commissioners yesterday actually voted to order cost estimates for either renovating the courthouse or replacing it, building new. So right now its future is kind of in jeopardy. It's an old courthouse built, I believe, in 1909.
Yeah.
And apparently there's some major electrical issues that could border on public safety risk at the present time. According to the officials, the fire inspector in Michigan City gave him a heads up about a year ago saying, hey, you better do something with this building or we're going to have to force you out, shut the courthouse down. So they're acting quickly right now to see if they can renovate the courthouse and or build a new one. Building a new one, you'd think, would be kind of controversial given the historic nature of the courthouse. They don't build courthouses like that anymore. Right now, we don't know the cost. Obviously, it'll be in the millions of dollars. That's why they've ordered the cost estimate for both renovation and building new. So we don't know what's going to happen yet, but those cost estimates should be coming in here in a couple of weeks.
Well, now, you've been through that building many times, I know, and covering meetings and checking out stories and the like there around Michigan City for the local media. Tell us a little bit about the courthouse in Michigan City. And you say that if it's in really bad shape, I guess they'd have to make a tough decision, but they hope that maybe they can kind of keep it alive, I suppose, one way or the other with renovations.
Yeah, and the inside looks nice. It doesn't seem dilapidated whatsoever, and it's not. It just comes down to the electrical system, and there's also some issues with adequate space. Some of the stairways are fairly narrow, some handicapped accessibility issues. Perhaps it's outgrown itself as the judicial system has grown and expanded over the years. So what they're thinking about doing is renovating the courthouse, and if it's renovated, they would add on to it with a structure that would double the size of the courthouse. But on the outside, it looks great. On the inside, it looks great. It's just really the electrical and some of the space issues right now that have to be dealt with.
Well, Stan, thanks for taking time to talk about the stories that you've been working on, not only the ones that have ended up in print, online as well, too, and we appreciate it. Hope to have you back on again, talking again soon.
All right, Chris, my pleasure.
Stan Maddox is a reporter and is, in fact, he's news director for the LaPorte County Broadcast Media. He's also a reporter and correspondent for the Times of Northwest Indiana and for the South Bend Tribune. The House Committee on Natural Resources on Wednesday approved Congressman Pete Visklosky's legislation to designate the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore as a national park. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson spoke with the congressman about it.
I know that you've been working on this initiative to get the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore designated as a national park. What is the value and the advantage of doing that?
The real value is that the national park designation would provide greater recognition for the Indiana Dunes as an attraction with the intent of drawing more visitors to our area and hopefully stimulating the local economy while also allowing people from across the United States as well as worldwide to be able to have the value of visiting this tremendous resource that has been set aside with U.S. taxpayers' dollars.
Do you have any kind of projections on how many more visitors we would get, international visitors?
We don't have an estimate, but I suggest to people the next time they're in a bookstore to look at the books that line our shelves detailing national parks. And as some people want to visit every Major League Baseball stadium, some people's checklist is every national park. This would designate the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore as the 60th park of the United States with that designation. And it is something that essentially had begun in 1916. So in a sense, a century later, we're completing the process.
Why has it taken a century to complete the process? Is it that hard of a process to complete?
The name change is not necessarily the hardest thing in the world to do. But I would suggest that it took 50 years for the creation of the park in the first instance. Subsequently, the efforts have been focused on enhancing the existing resource and expanding it. We've had three additional bills to expand the National Lakeshore. I'm very proud that in 1986 and 1992, I authored expansion bills that increased the boundaries and resources of the park itself. The name change, if you would, is of more recent vintage, has not been on the agenda, if you would, for the last century, although it was originally proposed that way. But very delighted that, one, all of my Indiana colleagues in the House of both parties, as well as both of our senators who have introduced a companion bill in the Senate, have been very supportive of this legislation. I would point out that the Lieutenant Governor of Indiana was in our offices last week and offered also, because she was meeting with Interior Department officials, to weigh in on our behalf. So I think there's also a recognition around the state of Indiana that this is also a state resource as well as a national and local resource.
If it gets this designation, will it change the park itself?
Other than signage, there will be no discernible change because obviously it is part of the national park system. It's a national federal facility today. So other than signage, there will be no change at all.
Would the hours of operation even change?
There will be no discernible change.
Anything else you can tell me about this that maybe I haven't asked you about that's important to note?
I'm just delighted that this has been also supported in a very bipartisan fashion by the Natural Resources Committee, both at the subcommittee level and the full committee level. It was obviously reported out to the full House today in a bipartisan, unanimous respect. And given all of the upset that people tend to see in Washington, D.C. when they turn on television, I think that's something to be very proud of, that this has brought people of both parties together. Our effort now will be to encourage the committee to have this legislation on the floor between now and the end of the year. That's our next goal.
Why did you decide to take this initiative on?
By the invitation and suggestion over the years by concerned citizens, members of the environmental community in Northwest Indiana, as well as members of the business community who have been very supportive of this initiative. Again, we have set aside this tremendous resource. As many people as possible ought to know it exists so that they can take advantage of it. and also hopefully spend some additional dollars in Northwest Indiana and our state. So this, again, has been very broadly supported and suggested in our communities, I'd say over the last 5 to 10 years, and happy it's coming to fruition.
That's Congressman Pifus Glosky talking about the U.S. House Committee on Natural Resources having voted on his bill to designate the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore as a national park, and it'll come up soon before the full House of Representatives. Let's check in with the latest involving the City of Gary's 2018 budget. And Gray Tejeda, who writes about the Gary City Council and other city government events for the Post Tribune, is with us. Greg, as always, thanks for being with us today. It was, I guess, the last real public opportunity that residents in Gary that came to the meeting got a chance to check over the 2018 Gary City government budget here. And from the story that you have online in the newspaper and print today, it's a budget that really isn't a whole lot different from the current 2017 budget.
Right. One thing city officials kept emphasizing is that there are parts of the budget, certain portions like the Redevelopment Commission, the bus company, the airport, their increase in budget is less than 1%. I seem to recall the percentage is 0.956%, if you want to be precise.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to claim that everything is more or less staying at the same levels. In the case of the bus company, there are some contractual obligations. Some people who have to get pay raises, and that's why their budget increased ever so slightly. But, you know, they are trying to keep within the limits because they don't have the largest of tax bases. They don't have a lot of extra money to be playing around with.
I understand, based on what you mentioned in your story, that there were some very serious comments. It was a pretty serious discussion, but there was some moments of levity that also came up as well in this discussion about the 2018 budget. And I guess to no one's real surprise, the levity came from one of the frequent critics, one of the watchdog of Gary City Hall, Jim Nowacki.
You mean the Neverland Airport?
That's right.
Michael Jackson.
That's right. Yeah, that was
airplane,
one.
Neverland.
That's right. Explain why he made reference to Michael Jackson and to Neverland Ranch in that.
Oh, Jim Nowacki is a constant critic of the airport. He believes it does not fulfill any kind of real obligation or provide enough of a benefit to Gary to be worth maintaining. So he's always looking for a good crack. And he, like I said, he was emphasizing the fact that there is no commercial air traffic there, so there aren't a lot of, you know, what people would normally think of as the flights that come in and out of an airport. I mean, there's business traffic, there's goods being shipped, but that doesn't necessarily draw the same amount of attention that a lot of commercial flights could actually go somewhere from the Gary Airport.
Yeah, I get the impression that he's mostly critical about the fact that the airports or airlines like Allegiant and others that tried to make a go in the Gary Chicago International Airport couldn't do so. It's busy, yeah, with the private aviation business going well there too. Boeing uses the airport runways to run their planes in and out of there too, since they have that facility there on the edge of the airport property. But yeah, no commercial flights coming in and out of Gary these days, so I can see why that he would want to take a shot at that as well too. I understand too, and one of the interesting points, and he brought up in the budget, the fact that there aren't many changes in the budget for 2018 compared to 2017, but some people that probably have deserved a pay raise for a long time are finally getting something. Tell us how the workers in the offices in City Hall are going to be getting some benefit out of this new budget coming up.
Well, there are the various municipal clerks in the different agencies who currently are being paid about $23,000. They're going to get a raise to about $25,000.
I guess
that's actually one of the bigger raises being provided for in the city budget. You know, the mayor justifies that these people do essential jobs that need to be done, and they deserve a little bit of extra money. You know, she argues that even that $2,000 isn't the biggest of pay raises. There are some people who argue that the money could be put to better use elsewhere. You know, put it into the parks, put it into the police, put it into the road repairs. You know, they'd like to see more money put into those areas.
Do you get the impression this might be the start to get more substantial pay raises for some of these people that haven't been paid well over the years?
I get the feeling some of them haven't gotten a raise in so long that this may be, you know, what they get for the near future.
Okay. All right. Tell us what's the procedure now. We've gone through this final public meeting for the 2018 Gary City budget. How does the budget go from there? It's sure to come back before the Common Council, and then it has further review to go through too, does it not?
Well, they've been working on this in committees for the past 2 months.
And in fact, people who really took the initiative to show up at those committee hearings could have been expressing themselves all throughout. But this week was the formal public hearing,
right,
in which all the eight different ordinances that when put together comprised the city budget, where they were given the chance to speak. And there were some people who felt the need to get up and speak on every single ordinance. This was their chance to let their views be known. Mm-hmm. Now what happens is the next council meeting is scheduled for October 17th. And that is when it comes up, you know, for the proper vote, because the council members didn't actually vote on anything. They just heard the public speak.
Yeah, right. Now, does this have to require any review by the state here before it officially takes effect next January?
After the council vote,
yeah,
we'll then go to the state, and that is needed to be done by the end of the month. And that actually, the state will be reviewing everybody's budget, so they're going to be very busy in and of themselves.
Yes.
The point is the city officials have until the end of the month before they absolutely have to get something to the state, or else the state will start penalizing the city if they become late. But it would appear, since with the city shooting to be approved by the 17th, they're going to make the end of the month deadline. So that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. Gray Tejeda is covering news in the city of Gary at City Hall and other entities for the Post Tribune. And as always, Greg, thanks for being with us. Talk with you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Northwest Indiana reporter Michael Puente was in Marquette Park in Gary not long ago for the annual Breast Cancer Awareness 5K, and while there, he had a chance to catch up with U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly. Donnelly, a Democrat, had an interesting work week not long ago, including traveling to Indianapolis on Air Force One to hear President Trump give his speech about the tax reform proposal. And here's the conversation.
Well, since President Trump has come into office, you've made an attempt to work with him in a way most other Democrats have not. You met with him last month at the White House with other senators for a dinner. What is your rationale for doing this?
Well, I work for everybody in Indiana, and so I don't work for a party. I work for the people of this state, and my job is to work with every president who's in the office, too. Again, I don't work for the president. I work for the people here. But if I have the opportunity to make life better for Hoosiers by working together, we'll do it every single time.
Now, on Wednesday, you attended the president's big speech in Indianapolis where he wrote out his tax reform proposal. Do you think this will help or hurt Hoosiers?
Well, the details have still not been fleshed out. This is kind of a broad outline, and so I told the president my parameters for tax reform is that we create more jobs here in our state, that the jobs that are here stay here, so you don't see steel jobs leaving because of unfair competition. We need to have tax laws that work for our industries, and that it be for the middle class, that paychecks for the middle class become a little bit bigger.
Now, in Indianapolis, the president called you out. He's saying he hopes you vote for the tax plan, and if you don't, he'll campaign against you like, quote, you wouldn't believe. What's your reaction to the president?
It doesn't bother me at all. I was glad to be there, but my job is to work for the people here. And so whether the president likes my vote or not is really of little consequence to me. What's of consequence is what I'm doing, the right thing for the people of Indiana.
Well, let me ask you this, though. In retrospect, do you think it was a good idea to travel on Air Force One with the president to Indianapolis? And are you going to continue meeting with the President Trump to stay on his good side?
Well, I thought it was a great idea because I also had a chance to sit down with him one-on-one and talk about the South Shore double tracking. And so I was able to get him familiar with that project and to talk about other issues of importance to Indiana as well. And any chance we get to grow our community, to move it forward, I'll take.
My last question has to do with Puerto Rico. Is the administration doing enough to help Puerto Rico after the hurricane?
This is a terrible situation, and we need to step it up on every front. The military needs to be much, much more engaged. We have people in big areas that are completely cut off, that the airports aren't open, that the roads are closed, that they're drinking river water, which will lead to diseases and other problems. So this is a situation that is dealing with our American brothers and sisters. They are as American as folks in Merrillville and Schererville and Porter County and LaPorte County. And so we have an obligation, and we need to step it up in every way.
Joe Donnelly is a U.S. Senator from Indiana. Senator Donnelly, thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today and this week. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. And once again, our thanks for participating in today's Reporters Roundtable Thursday to Dan Carton and Rob Earnshaw of the Times of Northwest Indiana, as well as Greg Tejeda from the Post Tribune, from the Times, and of course working as well as a writer for the South Bend Tribune, and the LaPorte radio media, Stan Maddox, Northwest Indiana reporter Michael Puente, and from Lakeshore Public Radio, Sharon Jackson. That's it for today. We'll be back with you on Monday.